This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 155. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name is David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show for another week, and we're burners free this week, but Gareth, you're with us again. How's the weather with you at Millfield today?
Yeah, glorious, mate, glorious. It's done a session outside, which is always good, being outside for the last couple of weeks, which has been fantastic, working in the artificial nets at the moment, but the ground staff here are preparing the grass nets for when we come back after the Easter holiday, so... it feels very cricket season here at the moment, and it's looking brilliant.
It evens things out a bit more, doesn't it, when you finally get outside? The bowlers finally get their chance to take a bit more advantage compared to indoor nets, where it's where everything's straight up and down, and the batsman can hit through the line, and everything's glorious for the ones with the willow.
Yeah, it's been an interesting winter indoors for us because I think that the shining the cricket balls are dying art, and our guys have been taught how to look after old cricket balls and get them back into decent nick. So I wouldn't say that the batters have had such an easy ride of it this year, because whether it's been flat off the pitch, the ball's been doing stuff in the air that's asked some questions. So I'm looking forward to us keeping the ball in decent nick when we get outside as well, as a bowling side, hugely. And you want to be taking wickets all the way down the batting list, because that would restrict run rates, and you know, most of the games are played nowadays 50 over cricket and club cricket, so the same thing applies. If you're taking regular wickets through lateral movement, whether it be through the air off the pitch or with spin, then you're going to be restricting that run rate.
Yeah, of course, run rate all important in the forthcoming big event of this time of year, which is the IPL. Lots of big hits and stumps going flying and all the drama and excitement of that. So we're in the fifth IPL season now, and you've been involved with it, Gareth. Where do you see the importance of the IPL in cricket now?
Well, I think the ICC are beginning to get a bit of a hold of it, and the Future Tours programme now, which is so important within international cricket, is starting to incorporate it a bit more. So ideally you want this tournament to have the best players in the world playing in it. For as much of it as possible, but it can only do that if it's part of the annual fixture list, and certainly the ICC have embraced that a little bit more, because otherwise we get to a situation where people will be choosing between IPL and international cricket, and that's not the situation that you want to get into. We had that, the West Indies probably being the best example of that to date, and that's not good for cricket, is it? So it does form part of international cricket now. It is part of the Future Tours programme going forward, and something that should be embraced, and it's going to be an interesting year this year for me watching it, because there's one less franchise than last year. Kochi obviously haven't made it through because of various reasons, and that provides some really good players coming out of that Kochi franchise that went back into the auction that they had recently. So there's going to be a slight shift in the teams. There's going to be shifts in the players that are playing for the teams, and obviously it'll be interesting to see how that relates into results, because the last couple of years there's been two or three sides that have really dominated the group stages and ended up dominating who wins and who comes second. So it'd be nice to see another franchise get in amongst it, really.
And yeah, there are people choosing 2020 ahead of other formats of cricket now. Of course, there's Chris Gayle, who basically goes around the world these days playing 2020 cricket and not much else. And there's a few other examples. So I guess, looking at it from an angle of a bit of a lower level, does that mean that there'll come a time sometime in the future where 2020 becomes all dominant, and we lose the a recreational level, games get shorter, and we start to lose that in between length of match that is, you know, somewhere between 40 and 50 overs, and it starts to fade away as 2020 becomes all powerful.
Ultimately, when we come down to recreational cricket, yeah, we still want people to play 50 over cricket. But also, I think it's massively important that we understand that we put on games of cricket and put on formats of cricket that suit the participant. This is one of the discussions that we used to have in Ireland quite a lot. You lose a lot of cricketers between the age of 16 and 20 as a result of them getting interested in other things. And cricket traditionally is a long game. And if they go, right, can I go and hang out with my mates, or you know, go out and see my girlfriend, go and walk along the beach or whatever, or do I have to play a six-hour game of cricket where I have to travel an hour or so to and from the game, then they'll probably choose the former. Whereas if you put on a format of cricket in the middle of the summer which says, right, you know, I put 3 hours of my time into that and then I can still do the things that I want to do around it, then you're more likely to retain those people until they get to the age where they want to play a longer format of the game. There's some significant research that goes around in all sports, and that's why things like sevens rugby are really taking off. And I saw a tens rugby competition last weekend here at school where obviously it's a slightly bigger game than the sevens, and it brings forward and back play into the game a little bit more. And I think sports, because of the way that society is going, sports need to be adaptable, and 2020 cricket has a big role to play within that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I like a game of 2020 cricket, and you can see young players nowadays, they are put off by the length of the recreational 50 over match. Even at lower levels in the league that we play in, you know, they play a shorter game, but it's still 45 overs. It's still a long day, even if there's not a massive amount of travelling involved in it. So, in many ways, yeah, you could be right. There's a gap, perhaps, for players to play in a 20 over format when they get beyond the age of 16, which is traditionally when they finish playing youth level cricket, which is 20 overs in an evening.
Absolutely, and the research is significant. It's not just across cricket; that's across all sports as well. People get to that age and other things come into their life, and I think it's up to the sports, rather than moaning about it, to do something about it. And 2020 cricket is a perfect format for that part of somebody's development. By the time they get to 21, 22, you'll get to the stage where they either want to continue playing or they don't, because they'll have other things. You know, it might be that they're having young families or whatever the case may be. And again, it's important that sports have a format that they can still play and incorporate their families into it. And again, 2020 can play a part in that. But you'll find that a lot of players do want to play for that that longer period. You know, want to play 45 and 50 over cricket because we've retained their interest in the game during their times between 16 and 21, 22.
I'm sure if Bernard's were here, he'd come up with his usual line, which is a good game's a short game. So that's probably the best place to leave it on that thought. But before we go into the next section, we just want to have a little a quick fire round section just to finish off this brief introduction. And it's going to be a very simple format. We have several questions, and each of those questions, you either answer yes or no to those questions without any further explanation. So maybe we can get a little bit of a first idea of where different people come from. So every week, whoever's on the show will answer these quick-fire questions. We've got three this week, so I'll read them out. And Gareth, if you give me your yes or no answer for each one, and then I'll quickly give my yes or no answer for each one, and we'll see where we are. And then at the end of it, if anyone wants more information about why we said yes or no, then maybe you can drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll discuss it in a bit more depth on the show. So without further ado, let's start the first ever yes-no round. Being tall helps with fast bowling.
Yes.
Yes. Leg stump is the best guard for a batsman to take.
No.
No. It's harder to open the bowling than open the batting.
Yes.
No. Time now for the question section on the show, where we reach into the mailbag and dig out a couple of questions to answer regarding cricket coaching or playing. And every week you have a chance when you have your question read out to win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Bernard isn't here this week, so I will read out the questions and Gareth will give us his answers in as much depth as always. So the first question is from Anthony. And Anthony says, I'm on a 3-week break from school at the moment, and when I go back, the cricket season starts. At the moment, although I'm not unfit, I want to be in better shape in time for the start of the cricket season. To make things even more complicated, I'm away in Spain in the final week of the holidays, so don't have access to a gym or a cricket ground. However, the house we're staying in is in the mountains, so this may provide fitness opportunities. How can I get myself in really good shape in such a short amount of time so I can have a really good season?
Cool. Well, firstly, 3 weeks, you're not going to make a massive amount of difference. Yeah. In a 3-week period, you're really there just going to sharpen up as opposed to actually make yourself fit. But as you say, you're not unfit, but you just want to be a bit sharper. It's been an interesting journey for me at Millfield. We've got all of this kit around us and all of this equipment in terms of gym stuff around us, yet none of our guys have been anywhere near one yet. And we've just done some fitness tests this week, and their yo-yo tests have gone up significantly, yet they haven't been anywhere near a gym because we've been doing loads of body weight stuff, loads of squatting, loads of lunging, lots of medicine ball work, lots of skipping, for example. And this is all basically built up their leg strength, their core strength. We've been doing Pilates twice a week. So nowhere near any gym stuff at all. And the guys' fitness results have gone through the roof from where they were 6 to 8 weeks ago. So I would say your mountains are a great place for you to do lots of lunges, lots of squatting. You can do some hill sprints. You can do some hopping from one leg to another. You can get your skipping rope out and work on your skipping technique. Lots of different things that you can do within your skipping technique, not just the boxing stuff, but we've been doing some in and out, so you're moving your feet outside the line of your rope and bringing it in by the time it comes back over. Some all sorts of different routines that you can do on skipping ropes. Football, you can take a football in your bag, you can deflate it, take a pump with you, and then you're doing press-ups on a football, sit-ups on a football. Take yourself a TheraBand, which is like a medical band. You can tie that to a tree and do lots of shoulder exercises for your throwing arm and for your bowling arm. There is heaps of stuff that you can do without a gym. And as I say, the lads here haven't been near a gym in the last 8 weeks, and their fitness results have gone through the roof. So use your time in Spain well. 15, 20 minutes, 3 times a day to break up the monotony of lying on your back and getting a suntan will do you good.
I would add to that yes, at this time of year, it's a time when you can easily do too much. You can overstretch yourself trying to make up for the fact that you maybe haven't done as much as you have wanted to do in previous weeks, and you end up giving yourself an injury because, you know, you beast yourself for 3 weeks, and then at the end of it, you're absolutely knackered, or, you know, you pull a hamstring, or you just do too much. So it's all about, fitness is all about gradually building things up, gradually building on the previous workout, rather than trying to make up for stuff that you've missed out for previously. So focus on a gradual build up. You're not going to do a huge amount in 3 weeks, as Gareth said, but what you can do is when the cricket season starts, it doesn't mean you have to stop working on fitness. There's still things you can do. It depends how often you're playing. If you're only playing once a week, you could still get a lot of fitness work in during the week. You're just making sure that you're getting sufficient rest before you play. But if you're playing maybe 3 or 4 times a week, then maybe you've got less of an opportunity. But you can still do, there's still things that you can do. So on top of what Gareth said, the two things that I would add is, don't try and make up for it too much. Think of it as a cumulative effect. Is that how you say it? Anyway, you're building up gradually.
Cumulative. Cumulative.
Yeah,
that's
there
the
you
one.
Go.
We're so clever on this show.
It's a cumulative effect.
And
also, when the cricket season starts, don't think that the fitness ends. There's still stuff you can do, even if you're playing quite a lot of games. There's still work that you can squeeze in here and there, especially if you're playing in the UK. There's plenty of rain around this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, I completely agree. Lunging, It's been a real eye-opener to me. I've worked with lots of strength and conditioning coaches over the years, but I'm working with a couple at the moment who are experts in youth development, so young people development. So a lot of the time we try to train kids in the same way as we would do adults and sort of put our adult training programs on top. And these guys are masters at training kids from all sorts of sports. We've been doing lots of lunging and lots of reverse lunging, so going backwards, which is a really difficult thing to do to start off with. And you can lunge wide, you can lunge narrow, you can lunge with a rotation, so by turning your body. And that's one of the things that happens when we play cricket and get into a match, is our rotations, we normally work in straight lines, don't we? And yet in a match, when we start to field, when we start to run between the wickets, we start to rotate quite a lot. And that's the thing that gets people stiff and sore when they first go out onto the cricket pitch at the beginning of the summer. And also that's the thing that can promote injury as well in that first few weeks of the season. So lunges with rotations are fantastic. Lots of squatting. Again, you can do narrow leg squatting, wide leg squatting. You can squat around a circle. You can do lots of balance work on one leg and trying to reach your other leg as far as you can and then coming back to the centre. All of this sort of stuff has been worked on at school with our guys over the last 8 weeks, 10 weeks or so. And as I say, without any gyms, our yo-yo tests have gone up, our sprint times have come down, and our leg strength in particular, our vertical jumps have all increased immeasurably and certainly a lot higher than I'd have thought. And none of that has been achieved by going anywhere near weights or anywhere near a gym.
It's actually a very sound principle to think of when you're thinking of training, to think of the movement pattern rather than the muscles that you're exercising. I mean, it's not a new idea to say movement's not muscles, but if you're thinking of the pattern, the movement pattern that you use when you play cricket, as you say, Gareth, a lunge position with one foot in front of the other, a squat position with the feet parallel to each other, and a hip hinge, which is more of a coming up rather than a squat's going down, if you like, a hip hinge or a deadlift movement is when you're coming up, and that's more of the posterior chain, that the back of the body. Those three movement patterns, in terms of your foot position and the way that your body moves in space, those are a great way to get you started. And there's hundreds of exercises around those three patterns that you can do. So think of it more as a movement pattern when you're developing your fitness, and you're in a better place than saying, right, I'm going to work on my quads today or my hamstrings, because that's a bit of a bodybuilder principle, and we don't want to be building big muscles for standing on the stage. We want to be building strong muscles and ligaments so you don't get injured and you can perform when you need to. Okay, the next question is from Gops. I think it was Gops anyway. I didn't quite get his name because it was just from an email address. So if that's wrong, Gops, I apologise. But Gops says, I'm 23 years old now and I play cricket at club level, but I'm more interested in coaching and becoming a full-time cricket coach. So I presume he's talking professionally there. I want to start early into coaching and would like to learn and deal with even the minute secrets of coaching. And I want to be really successful in the field. Can you suggest to me how I can follow my dream and achieve my objective? So he wants to make an early start as a professional coach. What do you think, Gareth?
Well, I mean, it depends where you're from, really, in some regards, because getting on board with coaching courses, say your level one or your introductory, and going through that process is absolutely the most valuable thing you can do as a coach. I'm a massive believer in coach education, as everybody will know. And I was very lucky because at the age of 18, I got on my level one and passed my level one, and I caught the bug. And it sounds like Gops has already caught the bug, which is great news. But what you learn within the level one course, and a lot of cricketers think it's a bit beneath them, but you actually learn about the coaching process. You learn about how children, who most of the time you're going to be working with children, particularly at the early stages of any professional coaching career, you tend to work with children. And you learn how they operate and how they want to learn and how we incorporate different elements of a coaching program into sessions and then over a longer period of time. And at level two, you start to build up more technical stuff, which is more in keeping with, say, somebody who's played the game. So a lot of the guys that come straight out of the game think that that's the starting point, when in fact the coaching process should be the starting point. And then when you get to level three, obviously you start to get a bit more sophisticated and looking at the professional game and what you can learn from that, and analysis and video cameras and all of that sort of stuff, and drills, and possibly looking at working with guys that have aspirations to play the game professionally. And level four is obviously all about the similar sort of things, but looking at the professional game and then into the international game, really. But get on board with coach education structure within the country that you live in as quickly as possible, and really take every step, everything out of each step as you go through, because you know, that coaching process is so important. And when I watch coaching sessions now, the content can be very, very good, because at the top levels, people know what they're talking about because they've been there, done it, they've been experienced around really good coaches. But yet, if they don't understand the coaching process, all of that knowledge can be lost. So that would be the first thing to get stuck into. And the other thing is to read and to listen, and to listen to shows like this, and to get access to a course like Kevin Peterson's course, for example, because that continual personal development is absolutely crucial. And just because you're a level four coach doesn't necessarily mean to say that you're at the end of your journey in terms of learning. That should be the start of your journey. And the best coaches in the world are the ones that research, they develop, they read, they ask questions. Those sort of fellows are the ones that kick on and make the most out of their professional career. So even somebody like a Mickey Arthur or a Gary Kirsten or a Andy Flower will still be asking lots of questions of people, trying to build their own understanding of things, reading lots, watching lots of videos, and basically never stop learning. So I probably haven't given you the answer you're looking for about four defensive shots and the such like, but that's actually the process which takes somebody from a young guy at the age of 23 like yourself through to maximising their potential as a coach.
Yeah, and get out there and do it as well. That's the other important thing, is making sure that when you're combining that learning with standing in front of a group of kids and think to yourself, okay, what problems have I got in front of me? You know, the theory is fantastic, but then you'll be faced with challenges that will never come up in any thing that you've learned on a course, that you'll be grateful for the experience for if you do that, and you'll make mistakes as you go along, but that's all part of the learning process. So, you know, get in front of a group of 25 kids with three tennis balls, and and suddenly you think to yourself, right, hang on a minute, I've got to get creative here, I've got to teach them something, I've got an hour and a half with them, and what am I going to do? So, you know, you've got to be getting out there and doing it, and volunteering and doing it. Even if your ambition is to do it as a coach at a professional team, then there's no harm in going to the local club and going to the under-8s and helping them play in their quick cricket or whatever the softball version of cricket is in your country. So experience, learning, yes, experience, absolutely.
It's a great point, David. That's absolutely, I completely agree with you. It's been something that I've seen a lot of recently, is guys, particularly as they get up towards level four, level three, level four, they understand all of the theory, but what tends to happen as people progress is actually they get further away from actually coaching. So we see a lot of talent identification managers now, as opposed to people that are actually coaches. And one of the things that does stick out like a sore thumb is that they have a lack of time actually working with groups of kids and actually working through those problems and those challenges that you talk about there. So getting your hands dirty is massively important. One of the questions I got asked recently is, why do I want to work at Millfield School? You know, because obviously that's a long way down the player development pathway from where I've been working over the last 7 or 8 years. But actually, that's where coaching is. A lot of the time over the last 7 or 8 years, when I've been working with the likes of KP and Michael Vaughan and Paul Collingwood and others, it's about managing the individual to get the best out of them as opposed to coaching the individual. And that's what I've really enjoyed about my role at Millfield to date, is the fact that I'm actually coaching somebody again rather than just merely managing and trying to get that peak performance out of an established player. So no, I absolutely, get your hands dirty, get involved, and as you say, David, do it.
Here's a follow-up question for you, Gareth. He's only played at club level. It sounds like he's not going to be getting into the professional game as a player. How much of a handicap is that to becoming a coach at the highest level?
It's a great question. And it is a handicap in some ways, but it's only one if you let it sort of stop you, really. And you're going to get comments like that along the way. And certainly, I can give a couple of examples, one being myself, in that although I played professional cricket for over 10 years, because I was a wicketkeeper and because the other wicketkeeper, Adrian Ames, was so A, fit, never got injured, and B, very consistent.
Damn him.
I didn't get the opportunity, and quite rightly so, because he outperformed me over a 9 or 10 year period, which is absolutely fine. I've got no bones to break with anybody about that. But I played 4 games, and yet if you talk to people, you ask people, and this was a question actually I got asked in an interview that I was on the interview panel, in that one of them said, how good a coach is Gareth? And the guy said, oh, he's all right or good or whatever he said, which is fair enough. And then the follow-up question was, how many first-class games do you think he played? And he said 150. He said, I spent about 150 and I played 4. And so it doesn't actually matter in that right. Another great example was a guy who I helped appoint after I left Somerset to go to England, a guy called Andy Hurry, who was a Marine. Never played first-class cricket, played for the combined forces side a couple of times. And yet he's been at the helm for 7 years. Somerset have consistently been a high-performing team within that, and probably haven't brought home the trophies that their talent would suggest. But I should anticipate that 2012 will be a good year for both Andy and for Somerset. And Andy was recently assistant coach on the England tour to the UAE in the One Dayers. So there's another example of somebody who did exactly what this young lad's talking about, Gops is talking about, getting involved very early. He worked his way through the Somerset age group system as a coach. I got him involved in the academy at Somerset. He was working as my S&C coach and as one of my coaches there. He came in and did second team when I took over the first team, and then it was an easy appointment to make because he was such a good coach to say that he's the right person to take over from me when I went over to work with England. So Andy Hurry is, I would say, a great example to anybody like Gops or anybody else out there. People will say, because you haven't played, you don't know your stuff. But ultimately, after a while, whether you played or not is irrelevant. It's how you coach. And as I say, somebody told me I played 150 first-class games last year when they got asked a question, and in fact, they were wrong by 146. And as with every week, it's an opportunity for one of our panellists to get up on the soapbox and rant and rave about something that's really bugging them at the moment. And this time it's the turn of David.
This week I want to talk about supplements. Someone said to me last week that supplements are not fitness. And in a way they were kind of right. And supplements are nutritional supplements are something that people often associate very negatively. They think about bodybuilding, they think about wild claims about building massive muscles and a lot of things which are either not true or half true, and there is a lot of that in supplements. But as far as I'm concerned, supplements are a very important part of any person's diet, and particularly cricketers if they're playing cricket regularly. You just have to know what you're looking for and what you're getting, and making sure that you're getting good quality stuff. So don't discount supplements when you're thinking about fitness and nutrition. Use them as a tool, as a little bit of a bonus tool, and it can give you an edge which maybe other people haven't got because they haven't thought about it as much. And that's all we've got time for on this week's show. But before we go, as is tradition, we're going to announce the winner of the competition, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Every week, the best question wins that prize. So, Gareth, we had two questions this week, one from Anthony about getting into shape when he's only got 3 weeks at the start of the season, and the other from Gots talking about becoming a coach full-time. Which one did you prefer?
It probably won't be a surprise to you, but I'm going to go to Gots' question, because it's the first time we've had somebody ask that type of question when there's a fitness one comes in fairly regularly. And also, I think there's a lot of people out there that that may have heard something in that answer which might encourage them to go on to get involved in their coaching. And whether you end up being a coach or not, I think getting involved in coach education is interesting, because you learn about processes which often help your own game as well. So it's a coach education question that wins it this week from Gots.
Congratulations, Gots, and you win a prize, an online coaching course, which is available at pitchvision.com/academy. If you fancy winning your own prize and getting your question answered in the meantime, then you can do so by sending in your question to us. You can email and call us, and Gareth, you've got the details there.
Yeah, it's coach@pitchvision.com and 0208 816 7691.
Yeah, that's right. And you can get us on Twitter, PV Cricket Coach. We're over there. And you can head over to facebook.com/Pitch Vision Academy if you are a Facebook user. If you want to subscribe to the show, you could do so in iTunes by logging into iTunes, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy and subscribing in there. And you can subscribe to the show to listen every week on your phone or any other device if you head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Find the podcast there and you'll see the feed there, which you can just slam into whatever device that you have going. That's all for this week. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, coach.